Welcome to the EDGE Conservation Podcast, where we bring you the latest in innovation, insight, and effort on the front lines of wildlife conservation in Africa and around the world. I'm your host, Kira Dorian. Today, we're taking you back to Limpopo, South Africa, where the president of EDGE, Nathan, is sitting down with Jeff Provenzano. He's a world-famous skydiver, and for Endangered Species Day just a few days ago, Jeff jumped out of a hot air balloon and over the rhinos in Africa that we are trying to save. He did it as a fundraising effort for EDGE and a contribution to wildlife conservation. And Nathan had a chance to sit down with Jeff and talk about what that experience was like and what it was like for Jeff to be in Africa. We hope you enjoy this little bonus episode.
So I'm Nathan. I'm not Kira, and I'm the president of EDGE. But given that we are here in the bush and Kira's back in Seattle and I'm sitting with Jeff, I'm going to run this interview today and try to do justice to the podcast. So, Jeff, welcome to South Africa.
What's up, Nathan? What's... Thanks, buddy.
So you've been here. This is your third day, right?
Yeah. I think day two, actually.
Second full day.
Less than 48 hours.
But it feels like a week.
It feels like a month. I mean, we've done more in the life, you know, than most people are ever going to do in South Africa in 2 days.
So let me introduce you to be sure we know who Jeff is. So Jeff Provenzano is here because he today jumped out of a hot air balloon along with us, which is not to say that we jumped out of the hot air balloon, but he's been on this little adventure with us. Jeff is a skydiver, one of the most famous on the planet, with over 20,000 jumps and jumps for the Red Bull Air Force team, and has jumped over the pyramids, has jumped for about every major sporting event you could imagine, is that fair to say, for movies like Iron Man 3, Godzilla, and then today did something which, as far as I know, is the first time something like this has been done, and he did it with us, which made us a very fortunate organization. But I want to know, since you landed in South Africa to today, the month you've spent here, what has changed? What did you learn? What was like, I had no idea it was going to be like this.
That's a very complicated question. I mean, just drop it on me all at once. I mean, there's a lot of things that I kind of, you know, just coming here and just, you know, just the general experience in itself, just seeing what the landscape looks like and really how all the preserves work and how, all the, you know, how they're all back to back next to each other, you know, almost like, you know, giant properties, farms, that are butted up right next to each other. I had no idea that that's how it really worked. You know, I kind of always imagined it more or less like back in the States, like national parks or something, you know, like there'd be just this like one area region where like all the animals, you know, in the kingdom kind of run around wild in that area. And, I didn't really, and I know there are areas like that in Africa. But I know they're shrinking massively in size, and a lot of the wildlife in those areas are endangered. Hmm. So a lot of them are coming to these preserves that are taking care of these animals, basically giving them protection and space to live, where they can still live in like their natural environment, you know, with plenty of space, but some boundaries to, you know, try to keep them contained, but also try to keep people out. And that is something I didn't really realize was such a huge problem. And now just seeing how it's all set up, I understand a lot more how the poaching works here too, like how poachers can come in and how easily, how much land there is to kind of protect, and you know how much land these creatures require. Just the whole idea of like, of that in itself, how poaching works, how the poachers can really access some of these places like pretty easily, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's more than I imagined to protect these animals. I thought, you know, you would just have like a few herds out in like this national park and, you know, a couple guys like chilling in a Jeep nearby, you know, and like, oh, here comes a poacher. Oh, we got easy day. And I realized like, oh, it's way more complicated. The network is far bigger than I thought and imagined. And just the land really is, I mean, there's a lot to cover. And I really couldn't imagine that before I came here.
So the plan, and this started in January, right? Now, did you have the Where in the World is Jeffro tour idea back in January?
So yeah, actually, Where in the World is Jeffro is kind of the reason why, what brought me out here. So I had this random idea back in around January. I had a meeting at Red Bull, and we were just shooting ideas, myself and one of my buddies over there, and I really wanted to travel to a number of new places this year that I've never been to before, never skydived before, and do a jump in all these new locations and then do something unique in each location. And, you know, and that's when we had probably met up just recently before that. And we had, you had told me about Edge and told me about South Africa. So when this idea of Where in the World is Jeffro came about, I started reaching out to all my friends around the world that I thought, like, hey, maybe I can go there and maybe I can go here. And there was a lot of logistics to work. So some places didn't make the list, you know. It was just like maybe too far or too much of a budget to like get to Bali or something. Some of them didn't make the cut. Connecticut, yeah. Wow, that's far. But
we just lost
we don't
want
to venture there. That's like really going into the bush. But yeah, I mean, then the idea came like, oh, I should call Nathan up and, you know, South Africa. He was talking so much about South Africa. Let me see what's going on out there. And really, it was just like reaching out to my friends to see where I can go, where in the world I can go and do a cool adventure trip. Make, you know, I wasn't looking to make 20 skydives in any of these locations. It was just about making one very unique, special jump in each location. And we pretty much nailed that today.
One of the things that I really, I think that I take away from when looking at your career is you have unique access to the world. And I mean that figuratively and literally. Like, people invite you because you bring this adventure, this unique sport and skill set that people admire and are awed by, but also you literally have unique access to everywhere you go because you come at it from straight up in the air, right? And that's, I mean, everybody you've interacted with over the last 2 days, like, they don't know somebody who, not only many people would say, oh, I know somebody who's skydived. You are at, what do we say, 20,000? Do you know exactly how many?
No, I just kind of throw out the number 20,000. Yeah. It's pretty rough, but.
So today was 20,001, we'll say.
We'll say 20,001. Nice, I like it.
Yeah, so you, I mean, that is a way that you look at the world. And what the opportunity here was to look at an area of operation for us, which is an area we're trying to offer security and protection to endangered species, particularly the rhino, and also where we're working with communities. But between your sort of documentary following this and just the attention you bring to it, all of a sudden we shine a light on what we're doing through you in a very, very different way. So it's really exciting for us because it's a totally different perspective that we could never offer on our own, right? So my question for you, considering all that, is when you approach somewhere on this tour, and particularly here, like, how do you see it differently coming down, both physically, like looking down at the landscape? You're talking about how big it is and how much there's to protect. How does it look differently from up there versus when you're down next to the fences? And then sort of in a spiritual way, you know, how does it sort of inform your spirit about a place? Do you suddenly feel more attached or more detached? You know, what's it like looking at a place, looking at the world more often from the air?
I think it connects me to those locations, you know? I mean, it's an amazing experience in itself to skydive, even at home, over the same place where I jump over and over and over again, thousands of jumps. To jump somewhere new, I mean, it really connects you with the place. It's a very exciting experience just in itself. And, you know, being able to come here to drive out to someplace in the dark like we did this morning, you know, to get ready before sunrise and enjoy the sunrise in this new location and just seeing this, you know, the environment and the landscape where we were as the sun is coming up and then starting to get the balloon ready. I mean, that's just like people pay money to go do that, right? Like, people spend a lot of money to do that as like an adventure experience. I'm lucky enough that that's kind of become my world. Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah, there are still some logistics involved and expensive, but it's not like when you are at my level and you do have kind of that network and access to so many things, you know, a lot of these pieces, they just the pieces of the puzzle, it brings it all together where, I don't know, it's just, kind of lost my train of thought there. I'm like just so distracted, like thinking about today still, it's just kind of like in my head.
Well, let's walk through how today went. So you're talking about driving out there in the dark, because when you were talking about that, the first thing that was, I mean, the whole thing was a thrill, but the first thing, I don't know where you were standing at this moment, but I looked down as Mark pulled up with the balloon, and across his headlights, a rhino. Like
a couple.
Yeah. Like two or three. A bull, a cow, and a little youngster.
A little young guy, yeah.
Walked across, and we could only see the silhouettes in the high, and that was the moment when it connected.
It was like, wait, oh my God.
Yeah, here we are.
I mean, to be out in this massive, massive property, I mean, and property is not even the right word for it. You know, like nobody owns
it's the bush.
Property like that. I mean, it's the bush. And to be just in their natural habitat, you know, it like that gave me goosebumps this morning, you know. And then being there to do something as exciting as what I was about to go do is exciting, like I said, even at home where I do it a million times. Now we're here in this very unique location on the other side of the world with these creatures that maybe someday are not going to be around anymore. Right. You know, I mean, they're just, we're losing them one by one pretty fast.
Three a day,
which is scary. Yeah. And, you know, the ones that we saw, to know that like maybe, oh, it's not like, oh, see you next year, rhinos. Like,
Hopefully. Yeah.
I mean, that's hopefully everything you're doing out here and, you know, all the other people that are out here, actually, I mean, the guys we met on the property, Eddie and everybody there, I mean, they were like, I mean, thank you. Thank them. Like, thank you for what you do. You know, the world doesn't realize, like, they don't know who's out there doing this stuff. Right. And that was something really cool to get, like, a face, like, when we first met those guys early in the morning and got onto their property, it was like, oh, these are the dudes?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, like
you expect
it was almost like I was almost like starstruck in a way, you know? Like it was like, oh my God, these are the dudes who are doing this. Mm-hmm. This is like what's real right now. These guys are real. They're out here taking care of these animals. Mm-hmm. These massive prehistoric, crazy-looking creatures that just are, you know, magical. I mean, it's like one of the most majestic creatures I've ever seen in my life. You know, until you see one like that up close and, you know, in person, it's, you know, it's something else to see it in a book. And, you know, I hope there's like some good photographs and images from this weekend that people from the other side of the world can kind of connect to.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so hard to really translate all of that into this like two-dimensional image.
And you never fully can. I mean, obviously, you know, we believe in photography in a huge way as being a part of the effort of conservation. And so yesterday you were there when we brought these kids out to teach them how to look at wildlife through the lens of a camera, you know, because we believe in investing in the community and inviting, you know, a skill and an art like photography. And we work with incredibly talented photographers. You know, we're very fortunate in that way. And then hold on, though, not only did you get to go out and in person, you know, jump in your suit, glide down and land on a field full of rhino, but you got to name a baby rhino.
I got to name him Baby Rhino. And yeah, we did. I got to wingsuit before that. Yeah, so the whole story went, we launched this balloon and we took it up to about 4,000 feet, luckily. And here's the beauty about all this, really, about the jump in itself, is there's so many moving parts to this, right? I mean, my flight could have been delayed. I could have been here a day later. It just screwed everything up. The winds, the weather, the... You know, a balloon has a really, really narrow window of wind that it can operate. I mean, pretty much it has to be like no wind.
Right.
Blue skies, no wind, which is like, you know, already there's maybe too much of a breeze now to launch a balloon. All the moving parts, all the other people involved, you know, the balloon driver, just like him getting his balloon all the way up here Like, his truck didn't break down. Something random. The balloon worked. Yeah. The burner didn't, like, malfunction this morning, or his fans didn't break down, or whatever it is. We got the balloon up in the air. We jumped in the basket. We were able to take it up to 4,000 feet. We didn't get blown across the country either. Right. To, like, you know, 4 miles down the road. Like, we were able to stay right above. It started to go in one direction, and then it kind of went up, and then it came right back over, over where all the rhinos were. And the fact that all that, you know, we planned this months ago now, a couple months ago, I think, and it all kind of came together, and that happened. When I stood on that railing, I mean, it was like kind of an autopilot for a second, like, all right, and I had to stop, and I'm like, you know, and there's cameras going, hey, how much time? I'm like, 10 seconds, you know, and I'm like five, and I was totally off on my timing of it because I like realized, like, hold on, I need to reset. I need to just take a deep breath. I need to remember, like, what's going on right now, and where I am, and who's down there. Mm-hmm. You know, my friends are down there. My new friends, you know, they don't know I'm their friend, but I consider them my friends. And I looked over at the camera. I looked over at Casey, probably like 15 seconds after I gave a 5 second, and I was like, all right. And I think I said maybe 3, 2, 1, and I hopped off, and I just caught a little bit of airspeed. And next thing I know, the wingsuit started taking flight, and I started, you know, getting a pretty good glide, comfortable glide. And I just started cruising, and I'm just over this beautiful South African landscape. And it, to be honest, I couldn't see rhinos from free fall. I mean, pretty little bit far away, and looking straight down, they're very camouflaged in. It's not like you can see their silhouettes horizontally or anything. They kind of blend in. So I was like, kind of looking, couldn't really see them in free fall. I was like, all right, I just know that they're below me though.
Yeah.
And I flare up, I open, have like the most perfect parachute opening. And that was just an amazing experience right there. And then once the parachute opens, it's like time gets to really slow down again. Cause now you got more time. You went from like, you know, descending at like vertically, you know, even though we're in a wingsuit, we're moving forward. We're probably going downward at about 40 or 50 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. To now I'm under a parachute descending at like a quarter of that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, even more time I have up here. Just like kind of hang out and float around underneath my parachute and just check out the landscape. I still continued to try to look for rhinos on the ground. Still couldn't see them. Yeah. From the air, it was really hard to see them.
Sure.
And everything's moving. I mean, it is slow, but it is moving a little bit too fast to like be like rhino sightseeing.
Yeah.
And I come in for landing. And the first thing I pretty much see after I land in my parachute hits the ground, I look over, and sure enough, there's three rhino, like 100 meters away from me. I'm like, oh, there they are.
Yeah.
There's three of them right there. Knowing that there's probably like a lot more out there.
Yeah.
Like 40 or more. And I mean, that was amazing. And then to top it off, we took that ride in the Jeep afterwards, threw my gear in the truck. We're like, all right, let's go look at some rhinos now. Let's go be some tourists and go look for the baby rhino. Mm-hmm. And we took that quick lap, and it was like, oh, the baby rhino should be around here somewhere.
Never see it. Yeah.
Never see it. And then he's like, oh, it's probably because they're in the bushes. And I kind of wrote it off. I was like, oh, that's a bummer. You know,
he's about 10 days old, I think.
I was like, that's a bummer. I really like would have thought we'd seen the baby rhino. You know, that's kind of like part of the whole GoFundMe page and, you know, to name this rhino, to name the baby rhino. And, well, on our way to go look at the buffalo.
Yeah.
Do-do-do-do-do. Sure enough, what comes running across the way?
Yeah.
Mama and the baby just come scooting right across. And I'm like, what? I mean, little fellow, from the distance I saw it, I mean, he might have been like, yay. Yay big? Is that about accurate?
Yeah, about the size of a small dog.
Yeah.
A medium-sized dog.
All right, maybe a little smaller like this.
And what did you name it?
Well, I didn't name it. A friend of mine named it. Okay. So I'm like passing on the name, but the name is Chicho. And my friend Roberta Mancino, she's an Italian hence the name Chicho. Mm-hmm. Kind of means like big, little plump, you know? Yeah. And it just has like a real masculine kind of sound to it. I thought, you know what? When Roberta told me, Chicho, name him Chicho. I was like, I like that. You know, it has that masculine sound to it. It kind of, the name, you know, chubby, thick, whatever.
Rolling.
So yeah, like Chicho. I said, that name just, like I said, it just really kind of captures that, the essence of a rhino.
Yeah.
You know?
I love it.
Yeah. So thanks to Roberta for helping me come up with the name. I loved it.
And now you have named a new member of an endangered species and help protect him.
I'm trying. Yeah. I hope, you know, I'm really hoping that, you know, I'm going to still push it out to all my social media followers and all my friends and family to, you know, hey, do what you can. You know, I think some people just are so hesitant when they see a GoFundMe page. They're like, yeah, GoFundMe. Like, there's so many out there. And it's just like, dude, just whatever. Don't be a dollar. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It takes nothing. Like, people are like, oh, you know, I'm strapped for money. Like, you're not strapped for a dollar.
Well, and sometimes people need somebody like you to validate it for them, to say, this is real. It's legit.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. Now, before we go, we did one other pretty exciting thing with you with elephants, with our partners, Rick Rue, Rory Hinsman Conservation Research Unit, Adventures with Elephants. And you have a special t-shirt out of it.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, actually. So I got to meet several elephants, and I got kissed by an elephant multiple times. I was like, I mean, she was basically trying to make out with me, I think.
Actually, I think that was a he, but yeah.
Oh, God, it was a he? Well, it's all right. It's okay. Yeah,
no, it's all okay. It's in the bush. You're
in the bush. What happens in the bush stays in the bush, right?
So we have these special elephants that with our partner that it's unique that you can interact with an elephant. They're rescued for culling, and they've provided incredible resources for research. So you got to go in there and interact with them in a way that, you know, most usually can't in the world. But we, you know, really quickly, what's one thing you learned interacting with those elephants that you had no idea of before?
I had no idea that their feet were so soft and they actually like could rumble the way they rumble like that.
Yeah.
And I had no idea, like, the feeling of the suction from the, you know, like that, how much suction they actually have when they come over and give you a kiss, especially when it's straight against on your face, like face kiss, like this giant, just about like 6 inches. I mean, I don't know, like this big, just literally covered trunk, basically covers your entire face and gives you a kiss by giving a little suction.
Awesome.
On the face.
It's a feeling you'll never forget too. Yeah.
And the t-shirt was basically he got a little paint on his snout, like water-based paint, like very, you know, it wasn't like anything crazy. And he gave me a kiss on my white t-shirt with his trunk, and it left this trunk print.
Yeah.
Which is like the cutest thing. It's just like a giant like pig nose almost. You know?
Or a heart. Looks like an inverted
kinda
heart.
Kind of looks like an inverted heart. Actually, now you say that, yeah.
No, it's, yeah. Well, look, Jeff, I'll send it over to Kira for a send-off, but I want to thank you so much for coming out here and doing this with us. And we've got one more thing tonight before you go, but this is an adventure none of us are going to forget, and we want to invite you back here every year, any year, and you know, let's explore the continent.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I'd love to bring, you know, some of my teammates out here next time.
100%.
You know?
We can, as they say in South Africa, we will make a plan.
Awesome. Right on,
Nathan.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the interview between Nathan and Jeff, and we thank Jeff for his incredible contribution to wildlife conservation. We thank all of you listeners for showing up today and listening to our podcast, and we look forward to bringing you another episode next week. Our podcast is produced by Eric Johnson, me, Kira Dorian, and Edge. Thanks for listening.